How do you feel about asking for things? Do you boldly and directly ask for what you want and need in life? Or do you have a lot of discomfort and fear around asking for things? Well, today you're going to learn how to let all of that go and start asking for what you want out of life. You might just find you get more than you could ever hope for. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're going to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Welcome to today's episode of Sound Bombing. Today, we're going to be getting into asking the power of asking for what you want and the blocks that might be getting in the way that are stopping you from asking for what you want and how to get more out of what you want out of life, out of your relationships, out of your business, out of your career. I mean, so much comes to asking. So today, we are really going to help you break through some obstacles, some challenges that are holding you back so you can get out there to be a badass in any area that matters to you. And I have someone sitting across from me in the bomb shelter, eager to share his story about getting what you want out of life. My man, Bobby Oddley. Bobby Oddley is a nationally recognized team culture and leadership development speaker and facilitator. Two times TEDx speaker. They've only asked me one time, and the host of 50 Cups of Coffee podcast, where he's interviewed professional athletes, coaches, and Fortune 500 executives on creating cultures of connection within the teams and organization. Bobby has trained some of the best teams in the world at organizations such as the University of North Carolina, the University of Maryland, and M&T Bank. Bobby spent 3 years as the founder of Outside the Zone, a leadership training company before joining the Pinot Training Group in 2015. The Pinot Training Group served over 80,000 people in 2019 and has been honored with several Speaker of the Year and Agency of the Awards in 14 years and over 700 teams served. Bobby and his team believes organizations do not need more information, do not need more best practices. We need genuine hosts, authentic and invested relationships. We need more connection. And brother, I am so excited that I'm connected to you. Welcome to the Bomb Studio, brother. How are you?
I am great, Lamar. Thank you for having me in the studio. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I've been blessed to have two TEDx talks. So don't act like you've only been invited once. I'm sure you could get another one if you wanted to, my man. I love the work you're doing.
Hey, I appreciate that, man. But we are in great company, man. I am so excited that you are here because, again, man, what's interesting, I was in the barbershop today talking to my barber because, you know, barbers are therapists. They're imams. Mm-hmm. They're rabbis, they're lawyers, they're salesmen and women. They have a whole bunch of information. And out of nowhere, my barber, shout out to the best barber on the East Coast, Bilal, we were talking about this whole conversation about asking for help and why do some people find it challenging to ask individuals for help. And so before we jump into that topic, man, I want to share with you a conversation that I got wind of years years ago. It came from the great Steve Jobs. And there was an interview with Steve Jobs on the remarkable power of asking for help, said, to achieve your greatest goals, sometimes all you have to do is ask. So, Bobby, I want you to check out this interview that Steve Jobs did back in the day. And I want you to then respond to what he's talking about as he's talking about asking for help.
I've actually always found something to be very true, which is most people don't get those experiences because they never ask. I've never found anybody that didn't want to help me if I asked them for help. I always call them up. I called up, this will date me, but I called up Bill Hewlett when I was 12 years old. And he lived in Palo Alto. His number was still in the phone book. And he answered the phone himself. Did I? Yes. I said, hi, I'm Steve Jobs. I'm 12 years old. I'm a student in high school, and I want to build a frequency counter. And I was wondering if you had any spare parts I could have. And he laughed, and he gave me the spare parts to build this frequency counter, and he gave me a job that summer in Hewlett Packard, working on the assembly line, putting nuts and bolts together on frequency counters. He got me a job in the place that built them. And I was in heaven. And I've never found anyone who said no or hung up the phone when I called. I just asked. And when people ask me, I try to be as responsive, you know, to pay that debt of gratitude back. Most people never pick up the phone and call. Most people never ask. And that's what separates sometimes the people that do things from the people that just dream about them. You gotta act. And you've got to be willing to fail. You've got to be willing to crash and burn, you know, with people on the phone, with starting a company, with whatever. If you're afraid of failing, you won't get very far.
So, Bobby, that was the great Steve Jobs. We know Steve Jobs mm-hmm. worked with Apple. Did you hear him? He said he was 12 years old. He called Bill Hewlett. Now, some people probably know who Bill Hewlett is, but we're talking right. about HP Bill Hewlett. What's your response to what Steve Jobs said about asking for help?
I think that's fantastic. I haven't heard that interview in years. I remember hearing that a long time ago, and I'm glad you brought it up, Lamar, because it is right in line with my podcast and the work I'm doing right now. And it answers the question that I get from a lot of people, which is this sense of, you know, like you said, asking for help or asking for a connection or asking to meet up or asking for advice. So many people feel that maybe it's vulnerability. Maybe it's a sense of not feeling worthy to do so. Or I think a lot of people will say it almost looks poorly on you if you're asking for that help or asking for those parts or those pieces. But what I've come to always believe, number one, I always ask myself, what's the worst that's going to happen? In that situation with Steve Jobs, he's 12 years old. He's calling up Hewlett, and it's what's the worst that's going to happen? Maybe he doesn't answer the phone. Maybe he says no. Maybe he laughs at you and says no. That's the worst that's going to happen. And so everything other than that is gravy. And so why not give it a shot? And then the other thing I've come to really believe is that it's impressive to ask for help. It actually shows confidence that this 12-year-old kid can call and say, this is what I'm looking for. And he's done his research to a degree because he's calling the right person. He's showing he's got an expertise. He's not calling and saying, can I have a job because you're successful? He's calling and saying, I want to build my own, whatever it was. And so Hewlett might look back and say, that's an impressive young kid who is building that thing. And I just continue to find that when you're asking for help in a very specific way to the right person, it's impressive to people more than anything else. So it does lead to those kinds of opportunities. And if he's a 12-year-old that's willing to call Hewlett, I'm sure there's other stories that he has where they didn't pick up the phone or he got a no. And I've read the biography that was done about Steve Jobs shortly after he passed away. And there's tons of stories in there of him not getting what he asks for. But the consistency is that he keeps asking.
I just want at 12 years old, man, I don't know what you were doing, but in Chicago, 12 years old, I know I was not, first of all, calling. I didn't even know who HP was. Let's start right there.
Right,
maybe I would
right.
call.
I didn't know there was the name behind
maybe
it.
I would have called like Mr. Atari. Could you imagine at 12 years old, like, Mr. Atari, can you show me how to beat this game? But again, right. 12 years old, not only did Hewlett readily agree to Steve's request, but he offered him a summer job at his company assembling frequency counters, which said that at a very young age, Steve Jobs figured out there's a way to get to places, and not just by my own pedigree and the information I have, but having people as resources. And I think a lot of times when we want support, we think we want the financial resources. But this is a great example that, yeah, this guy is very wealthy, but the fact that his number was in the phone book is also funny. But then the fact that he was able to then get a job, but then also get the parts. But I like how you said, in Steve Jobs, and we don't want to stick a lot of time on Steve Jobs, but you also said there were a lot of people that didn't give him the things, but you said the word that I really, really appreciate. You said he was very consistent. Let's talk about that, man. Let's talk about that word consistency, and how has that been helpful for the work that you've been doing around the 50 Cups of Coffee Challenge? We're going to talk about that shortly.
Yeah, consistency is the name of the game. I think that is, you know, one of my goals with the podcast is to kind of dispel this belief that we see and social media, I think, is fantastic. It is putting out a lot of good stuff. I think we've kind of taken almost back. I have, at least individually, you can take back control of your own social media. If you think it's too negative, it's because you're liking and commenting on and scrolling past negative stuff. Clear that out. Find the positive stuff. So there's on my feed, there's a lot of entrepreneurial things. There's quotes from Steve Jobs. There's these kinds of interviews. And it's easy to sit back and say, okay, great. So all I've got to do is reach out to Hewlett, the person I want to connect with, and provide value and ask for what I want to ask. And then I'll get my yes. And the reality is, you don't know how many phone calls Steve Jobs made prior to that. You don't know how many he made after that. Like there is a lot of no's. There's a lot of no responses. And so when it comes to anything, consistency is the name of the game. When I first got into what I do about 9 years ago, I went to my first trade show conference to be a leadership development speaker. I was doing a program at the time on effective communication. And I went up to a guy who was, I'd say at that time, you know, really rocking it in the college market world. And I grabbed him and I said, and I've never met you before, but I grabbed him in the hallway and said, I need to know, like, this is my first conference. What is your advice for me? And he said, my advice for you is to show up for year two, because so many speakers, comedians, musicians, you name it, come through these trade shows selling to colleges and they have a bad first conference and they never show up again. I got no events from that first conference, paid, stayed in a hotel, traveled, got nothing from it, and showed up for year two, year three, year four, year five. And the consistency is what made the difference. My podcast I'm launching, you know this, Lamar, you've got a successful podcast. I talked with an individual who is a podcast producer to hear his advice and said he said that the average, these are his numbers, so I don't know where he got them from, but he said the average podcast that launches doesn't go beyond 6 episodes, because after 6 episodes, either it's not getting traction, or the person putting it out gets bored with it, or they're not getting the immediate results that they want. And I've never done anything in life that didn't take a long, long time before it started to receive traction. I mean, the 50 Cups of Coffee, I did that TEDx talk back in 2016. I'm launching the podcast now, because it takes that, like, the idea and the process and building up a list of great guests, all that stuff takes just consistently beating the same drum.
So let's talk about this, because I take it that you like coffee. Do you have a favorite coffee? Let's start.
I do like coffee. So we're both,
because I'm a tea drinker. Maybe mine should be called 50 right. cups of tea.
That's probably, it's a little less caffeine, so maybe that would serve me well. But here we're both in Maryland. I love Rise Up Coffee.
So you like coffee.
I love coffee and Rise Up. I used to live in Salisbury. Rise Up is based, I think their headquarters are in Easton, based on the Eastern Shore. They got one now in Annapolis, but I love them. And yeah, when I travel, I think I've been in 38 states at this rate, and I always love finding like a cool local coffee shop, not just for the coffee, but the vibe, the space. I love it. It definitely is a passion.
So of course we're talking about coffee, but this conversation really, really is not just about 50 cups of coffee. I remember reading an article in Inc. magazine called How 50 Cups of Coffee Can Change Your Life, and then all of a sudden I see your TED talk, and then I read your article, and I'm like, this dude must really like coffee, or he just like really like hanging around coffee shop. Explain to our listeners what this whole concept of 50 cups of coffee means in that challenge, and what it's been doing for you, for your career, and even the people that's in your circle.
Yeah. And honestly, it goes back to the theme of the podcast, which is being willing to ask for what you want. And for me, like I said, my first conference back in the day when I started speaking, I grabbed a guy in the hallway who became a mentor to me and just asked him for his advice. And even at these conferences, I would always ask people to sit down and chat. And at the time, it always became, you know, especially at these trade shows, they're long hours, long days, you're tired. An easy break is usually a coffee break. Whether you're having coffee or not is irrelevant. Maybe you have tea, maybe you have water, but there's usually a Starbucks or something like that in the lobby of the hotel. Would you be willing to go grab a cup of coffee? We can sit down and chat for 15 minutes. And then when I, you know, even in my local community, this was back in 2014 is really the first time I think I had this idea to make it of doing 50 in a year. But even in my local community, it was sitting down and connecting with people over a cup of coffee. And there is actually a book called The 52 Cups of Coffee written by kind of chronicle her interviews with people. And there's certainly been articles. There's a guy I talked to out of Australia who has a TEDx talk on 100 cups of coffee that he had with people all over the world and what he learned about culture. And so the idea is not new, but for me, it became relevant for people that are looking to connect with, say, the Hewletts of the world and thinking, well, they would never want to talk to me. So I had a job, and I talk about this in the TED Talk, so I won't go too detailed, but this relevant for this. I had a job in Salisbury, Maryland, where I was running the Entrepreneur Center, which at the time was in the basement of the downtown library. We were looking to create a space for entrepreneurs, not only to come like a co-working space, but also have access to resources. And I was very passionate that they should have access to other professionals, mentors, people they could connect with. So that meant that I had to be the one to find those connections. And there was one guy in town who was an angel investor. So he had, it's kind of like a Shark Tank kind of guy. And he had invested in a lot of successful companies. He was connected to the local hospital. I knew he was out there. I knew who he was. And there's a certain sense of talking about asking for what you want. Who am I to reach out them and say, would you want to be involved in this Entrepreneur Center? That's a big ask right off the bat. So instead of doing that, I reached out and said, would you be willing to I'd love to buy you a cup of coffee. You know, if you grab coffee in the morning, would you be open to that? And it was an immediate yes. We sat down, and that became almost a weekly thing of sitting down and connecting with him. And then other people, what I started to do is say, you know what, if you're super busy, maybe you drive in the morning to grab a cup of coffee, and I can grab you on the phone while you're driving. And then it expanded beyond that to say there was an author I wanted to connect with. And I emailed him and said, you know, I know as a speaker that there are a lot of dead time where you're waiting in line at the airport in an Uber to the airport or to your hotel, just sitting in your hotel room. Can we chat on one of those times? And I fit that into the cup of coffee movement because it's basically saying, you're right, it's not about coffee. It's about finding, you're making it easy for people to say yes. Make it easy for people to say yes by saying, I'm not adding anything to your day. I'm looking to fit into your day and fit into your day in a way that might serve you. Instead of just sitting in your car, let's connect and talk. And like Steve Jobs did with Hewlett, he said, here's exactly what I want to do. And I know you're the expert in that. That's part of it too. You're not reaching out just to say, can I pick your brain? You're saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. For the example, the Entrepreneur Center, I'm running, building and growing an Entrepreneur Center in downtown Salisbury that's really going to serve this community. And I know you've been involved in that kind of stuff in the past. I'd love to know your advice on how we should run this place. And for, who doesn't want to, I mean, how many times have you sat back, read something in the paper and thought, man, if they only asked me for my advice, things would go better. And so I wasn't asking for his manpower, his energy. I was simply asking for his advice, and it led to his manpower. So that for me is where, and then I will give credit. I will wrap up this story to your simple question by giving credit to my wife, because when I did my first TEDx talk on why you shouldn't do your best. It was about playing full out, giving it all you have instead of settling for, hey, I did the best I could do, good enough versus extraordinary mentality. And when I was then asked to do a second TEDx talk, and I didn't know what I was going to talk about. I said, like, I've done my TEDx talk, like I've given my message. And my wife was the one who said, why don't you do it on the 50 Cups of Coffee Challenge? Because at the time, it was just my own personal challenge to make sure I was connecting with people, knowing it was good for my growth and also professional growth.
That was a smart move. That was a smart move to set, to put your, because you want to put your wife out there. So this is what I'm hearing. Setting the goal of having coffee with 50 people forces you to be clear about your goals. Making the goal public one person at a time also makes it much stronger. So having 50 cups of coffee is good, because then you have to commit to the specific move that you want to make, and it gets you input from smart and interesting people. So that's what you're doing.
That's right. Yeah. And in the number, I always get asked, do you really do 50?
I was going to ask you, have you actually had, do you probably go into the bathroom a whole lot? Because if coffee does what it does, because tea sends me to, listen, if I had 50 cups of tea with anybody, I would have to sit like right next to the restroom, because it's like
not a, all in it one runs straight through Lamar, me. But yeah. I do. So I track it on Evernote. I use that.
I love Evernote. And I'm glad that you're talking about some of the tools that you're using.
Yeah. So I track it on Evernote to keep my, like, I won't do it in the moment. Sometimes I will, but afterward, I'll just kind of take down some notes of what I'm talking about. But I will say this too. They're not all. So I include, the whole point is connection. The whole point is that I think we are just getting away from just deep conversation. The podcast, these interviews are almost an hour and a half long, which is kind of, you know, going against the grain in terms of personal development podcasts. But for me, it really is about having a deep conversation. And so a lot of times, you know, if I sit down and have a cup of coffee or a meal with my brother one-on-one, and we're just talking about life, I include that, because that is creating a deeper connection with him than I would have otherwise. I'm a big believer in small groups. I'm a big believer in one-on-one conversations, that, you know, it's kind of like date night with your spouse. Yes, it's great to go out with your kids, but having even 30 minutes to just one-on-one talk with that individual deepens the relationship. So people always ask me, do I really get to 50? And it's absolutely, you don't have to challenge yourself to find 50 people that are difficult to reach out to. I think they're your kind of those people that talk, break it up, three different groups. You have those that you want to learn from, those that you simply want to connect with, and those that you can mentor. And so if you're having a conversation with someone where you're the one that they ask to coffee and you're the one providing the advice, that's 50 cups of coffee for you as well, because when you teach, you learn. So that's included.
So you've mentioned this word twice, deep conversation. So what is the key to a great and or deep conversation?
For me, the key is curiosity. Be curious, be interested in what the person's talking about. Actively listen. I think a lot of times I do it myself too. So we do an activity. I work with Ryan Pinot, which is with Pinot Training Group. And he and I do an activity in a lot of our workshops called Life Story, where you sit from a partner, typically someone you've never met before, and we ask you to sit with some sort of physical contact. So toes touching, knees touching, if you're comfortable, if you're able. And I would give, say, person A, say, Lamar, you're person A, I'm person B. Lamar being person A, you have 3 minutes to tell me your life story, and I just listen. I don't interrupt. I don't add my two cents. I don't ask a question. I just listen. At the end of 3 minutes, then I get a chance to go and you just listen. At the end of that, then we get about 5-6 minutes to just connect and talk. And what's amazing is that becomes such a powerful activity for so many people, because so many of us are constant interrupters. When someone's talking, we're thinking of the next question we want to ask. We're asking a question that certainly maybe is engaging, but it takes the person talking off track into a different direction, instead of just letting someone talk. So I think letting people just talk is important. But then the second thing is make sure you're actually listening to them when they're talking. Because how many of you us have ever, someone's talking and we're looking down at our phone, or our brain is thinking of something else, or we're off on a tangent. And it's totally normal. It's not bad, but we need to take back control of that to be curious. And the other side of being curious is, if you are interested in something, if Steve Jobs is interested in whatever that thing he was making is, then know everything about that thing. Don't go into a conversation with a guy like Hewlett. And now he was 12 years old, so maybe we give him a break. But don't go into it not knowing everything all that you can find already, especially with the internet today. If you go into a cup of coffee meeting with someone, this author that I wanted to connect with, It's John Gordon. He wrote The Energy Bus.
Great.
And he's written six.
I love The Energy Bus. I use The Energy Bus at schools, but you know, there's also a children's form of The Energy Bus. I love The Energy Bus for anybody out there who's looking for a way to re-engage your team who lost some type of morale or the energy is sort of low. The Energy Bus is a really, really great story because I love the power of storytelling. You know, you and I, we talk about the power of storytelling.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
If anybody's interested in that book, also check out the one for children. But you're working, you said you're about to interview him or have a conversation with him.
Yeah, well, so my point is, I reached out to John Gordon and to him, and it was at the time I was working primarily with college market groups like orientation leaders, resident assistants, student leaders in that sense. And I still do that work, but I wanted to work with athletes and I hadn't found a way to crack into athletics. And he had been working with a lot of athletic teams. So that was my question I had for him. But before I reached out to him, I've read almost every single one of his books. I haven't read every single one, but I've read the ones that stood out to me, the ones that I was interested in. I'd say maybe five of them. And I've watched a lot of his videos on YouTube. I've looked up everything online. I'm in the same space of building positive energy team cultures. So when I went into that, I had already done my research. So he and I are going to have a good, deep, good conversation instead of going into it having never read his book. And then at that rate, you're wasting his time, because if you're asking questions that are answered by a quick Google search or answered by reading his book, then it's a waste of time conversation. So again, my two pieces for deep conversation are be curious and know what you're talking about going into something. That doesn't mean you have to be the expert, but be prepared for the conversation so that it's a good use of everyone's time.
So you mentioned the Pinot Training Group, and I know you are a national trainer, traveling all over the country, doing this work around leadership, around personal development, around being an authentic individual. How can you or how can we help organizations create a culture, or what is the strategy? Let me do this. What is a good strategy to help an organization to create a culture where asking for help is encouraged?
That's a good question. Well, I think it comes from it starts from the top down. It really does. When it comes from people being willing to ask for help, people willing to ask for what they need. And we talk a lot about with groups about core values. When we talk about core values, we say, we're not just going to come in and do some exercise where we identify core values. They put on the wall and in a really nice poster, but they're not actually lived. We need to actually live and feel and believe these core values. That's the number one question. When I work with a team or organization, if I walk in the room and they have core values on the wall, first, before I even say hi, before I say my name, I've done this a few times where you walk in and they're right there. I point at them and I say, what are those? And it says core values at the top. And so they look at me like I'm an idiot. And they say, well, there are core values. And I go, are they? Or do you live these, or do they just live on the wall? And you get one or two responses. Sometimes you'll get people that will laugh and look at each other like, who is this guy and what are we getting into? Because they do just live on the wall. Or they'll say, well, we live them. We believe them. And then I know that that's the culture of the organization, because there is on the wall that lived in reality. So when it comes for asking for help, you know, if we were to sit down and do a workshop and say, what are your core values? I can't think of a manager, a CEO, a coach in the world that would say, I don't want people asking for help. They would put that as the core value, but then say, how do you create space so that people can do that? I work with UNC Volleyball. Their coach has a requirement that you must meet with him every 2 weeks for at least 5 minutes. That's it. 5 minutes is the only requirement. If the 5 minute meeting is, hey, I'm here because I'm supposed to be here, but I have nothing to talk about, great, that's it. If it extends to an hour, then great, we got something to talk about. What that creates is genuinely an open door policy. It's not just a boss saying, hey, my door's always open. It's a boss saying, my door's always open, and I'm going to require you to walk in at least once every 2 weeks, and I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your feedback. And if you hear people asking for help and asking questions, respond to it. Do something about it. Take action. Because if you just keep hearing the questions and you take them down, you put them in the parking lot on your post-it wall or on your whiteboard wall, but you don't do anything with it, now you're going to create cynicism and bitterness and a sense that, okay, we've got all the right words, but but we don't do anything with it. So genuinely creating space for people to ask questions and taking action on something, doing something with it, because people will see through the BS if you just, you hear the right words, but you don't do anything with it. And if people don't like rejection, it's just reality. It's even with friends. I'm a very busy guy. My wife is busy. And she'll say every now and again, oh, so-and-so, man, like I saw on Facebook, they all got together, but they didn't invite us this time. And I said, well, because we said no the last time. Right? And that's, and it's, it,
you know, you know, they call people, that research now is called Facebook depression, man.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing that's, more yeah, that's of that.
People
that
are looking,
yeah.
People are looking at other folks a lot, but you out changing the world and you're making a nice penny off of it and you're pouring back into individuals. But it's funny that you would say that because you hear that quite a bit with individuals about, oh, we look at Facebook, but look at what you
people,
all are
so
doing.
That's it. People don't like, but the same is true if you're an office that says, or a coach that says, I want my players to tell me when they need help, but they, every time they ask for help, you don't do anything about it, then it's going to go away. It's taking action. And one of our core values for our organization, Pinot Training Group, is, make sure you have everything you need. If Ryan gives me a project, he'll constantly say, do you have everything you need from me? Almost to an annoying level where it's constantly saying, hey, do you have everything you need from me for this? So at the end of the day, if I don't get it done, I can't look back at him and say, well, you didn't provide me this or this. He's creating that openness and space for, do you have everything you need from me? You can't just expect people to ask for what they need. Create space for them to ask.
You know, talking to you, I love hearing the passion and the drive in your voice. And you're not just doing this because you're a part of the show. For those that aren't familiar with Bobby's work, and I encourage you to check it out, this brother is always passionate, fired up, moving around. It's kind of hard to find him on a camera because he's moving so much just like me. And so I love to hear your passion and your voice.
They gave me like a rug for TEDx that I had to stay with.
Yeah, man. They try. I always tell the cameraman, listen, Bobby, I said, let me just be real clear. If you are shooting with one camera, that thing needs to be on something that's moving because I refuse to stay still. Don't put me at a podium. And so I love your energy. So what would you say is the intent of your work then? I mean, I'm hearing the passion in your voice. I'm looking at your writings. But what is the intent of your work?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, the intent really for me on a deeper level is I love being a part of an effective team. I love connecting with people. As an athlete my whole life, I always played team sports, and there was just a passion and a drive around going after a common goal and being a part of a real genuine team. And I've been a part of some teams that were team in name only. And you can just see how that sucks the life out of an organization or a group. I think culture really does make a difference. I'm a big fan of the NBA. I watch a lot of basketball, and you can see these top tier players, phenomenal players. I was just talking to my brother the other day. I might make some, I live in the Baltimore, DC area. I live in Columbia. We're Wizards fans. And so I'm not throwing shade on the Wizards organization, but it is amazing. My brother and I were talking the other day about how you see a guy like Dwight Howard who it's kind of a flop here in DC, goes to LA and is now thriving and back in the dunk contest. And as an individual, kind of just getting into a great space. And I really do believe it comes down to the culture of the locker room. And maybe that's run by the owners. Maybe that's LeBron. I don't know, but I think culture connection really matters. You talked about Facebook and FOMO and the connection. A lot of it is we are connected to people online, but we're disconnected more than ever in person. And so I just really look at across the board, whether you're an athletic team, where a lot of our work is, you're a company, you're a school, you're a family. Culture and connection is what allows individuals to really step into their peak performance. And my work over the last 10 years has been focused on that idea of what you're focused on. How can people really thrive and do their best? And I have just come to believe that it's the power who you surround yourself with and the culture that is created. So it's just, I don't know if it's, I've always been this way. I don't know if I'm just, was born being passionate about it. It's definitely a natural tendency, but I've also in doing this work for almost 10 years, I should say, it really has, for me, I just have come to believe that culture and connection is the difference maker in all of this stuff.
Well, with all the people that you've been sitting down with and that you're going to continue to sit down with your movement of the 50 cup coffee challenge, what is a lesson that you've learned from maybe from yourself or just a lesson that you that stood out to you from maybe one of the men or women that you sat down with drinking coffee with?
Yeah, I'll give you three really cool lessons that I pulled away doing this podcast so far. So number one, on your point of asking for things, I decided to do this podcast back in October and started, bought the equipment, was doing the research on how to make it happen, and read a number of articles on how to do it successfully, and saw that you should have 5 interviews in the tank ready to go by the time you launch, just to give yourself a cushion in terms of maybe guests cancel or technology doesn't work, whatever. So I reached out to 10 people and I wanted to have 5 of those 10. I was hoping to have 5 interviews done by the end of the year, thinking I'm not going to get all 10. Well, by the end of 2019, I had 15 interviews done, because not only had all 10 said yes, but on top of that, other people had reached out showing interest, wanting to be on the podcast, or I bumped into them and asked them. One of the interviews was at the soccer convention in Baltimore. I saw a coach I hadn't seen in years and said, "You got time to sit down?" And he did. So what I've, number one lesson is going back to that ask for things, is just be willing to ask, put yourself out there. And I do believe I'm hearing a lot of stories doing this work now of people saying the same thing, of it's amazing how many people say yes. The second thing I learned is my first interview was with Harry Swain, who was the director of player development for the Ravens when they won their Super Bowl back in 2012. He played for the Ravens. This man has won 4 Super Bowls as a player and then as an executive. And I said to him, and then he was a part of 2 other Super Bowl teams that lost. And so he's been a part of 6 Super Bowls. So I said, 15 years in the NFL, I said, "Harry, are you the luckiest football player in the world? Or is there something consistent about these teams that you were on? Is there something consistent about you and how you show up?" And he said every team he was on that went to the Super Bowl, so even the ones that lost, they still made it to the Super Bowl. Every team that he was on that went to the Super Bowl had a core group of 6 or 7 guys. And you're talking about a team of 50 people, core group of 6 or 7 guys that led the culture, that really set the tone of, this is how we're going to do things here. And that's all it took for everybody else to fall in line. And they weren't always the best players on the field. They were just individuals that set the tone. And so I think that is a huge lesson that I've seen play out time and time again, of it takes 10%, or less than that in this case, to just say, we are going to shift and change things, and we're going to stand by that reality of how we do things. And last thing I've learned from these so far is I interviewed, as I said, Joe Stagula is the head volleyball coach for University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And I said to him at the end of the interview, he's been there for 20, 30 years, I think. I go, "You are surrounded by top coaches in sports, Anson Doran, Roy Williams, you name it, national champion levels, Bresci." And I said, "What have you learned from being in these folks' energy?" And he said, "He's learned to not try to be anybody but himself. Because if he tries to be Anson Dorrance, it's not going to work. If he tries to be Roy Williams, it's not going to work. Pull what you can from those individuals, learn what you can from those folks, and do it in your way. Do not try to be someone else. Learn and grow and implement in a way that only you can implement, because you're not replicable and neither are they." And those are just those 3 things, having done, I think, 15 interviews at this rate, those 3 things have really stood out to me.
Bobby, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
Best way is on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. I'm at Bobby Audley, BobbyAudley, and LinkedIn as well. And then if you go to PennauTrainingGroup.com, that's PennauTrainingGroup.com traininggroup.com, you can see the work that Ryan and I are doing with teams and organizations, and just kind of access our content and some of our videos, and also check out the podcast, 50 Cups of Coffee with Bobby Audley podcast. And then, of course, the TEDx talk. If you YouTube it, it's not on the TED site yet. But if you YouTube it, you can check that out as well.
Well, before you get out of here, I have to introduce you to my favorite part of the show, and that is called the Super Bomb Questions. And what the Super Bomb Questions are, man, this is the rapid fire questions. I'm going to throw out a question to you, Bobby, and I want you to respond as quickly as you can. Here we go.
Okay. Three. Quick and concise. You are
quick
challenging
and concise.
This is good.
Three, two, one. What's your morning routine?
My morning routine is to get up. I stretch for about 5 minutes or so and take a shower, grab a cup of coffee and breakfast, which is usually a smoothie or something like that. And I have challenged myself to meditate. I don't do it every day. It's helpful, but it's definitely, I can't say it's part of the routine yet, but I'm getting there.
What's your favorite word?
I would say passion.
Okay.
Passion. That's my answer. Yeah.
What dead person would you most like to meet or get advice from?
John Wood.
What's your superpower?
What is my superpower? My superpower is conversation.
What's your spirit animal?
My spirit animal. I'm not a dog person, but I'd say dogs because I think I'm pretty friendly.
All right. If you were in the Mr. America talent competition, what would your talent be?
My talent would be talking. That is all I can do. Whether it's given, maybe I'd give a speech or something like that.
So what is the best book that you've given as a gift and why?
The book that I always give as a gift is Wooden. It's the, I know he's got a couple books, but it's Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations and Reflections on and Off the Court by Coach John Wooden. And the reason why is because it's clear, concise, and honest. He's got a bunch of little just kind of just, I think, beautiful life lessons and things that he taught his players over the years.
Well, Bobby Oddly, man, I thank you. I wish you much success. I enjoy spending time with you today. And until we speak again, may you have the courage to be who you are and to know on a deep level that you are awesome. I would also like to thank my producer, Tuari Ganges, and Supremacy for our theme music, and all of you for listening. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen and that some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. Thanks for tuning in, and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Here's a bonus track from today's show. Here are a handful of things that can get the response that you might be looking for. Be assertive. There's something about combining confidence with control that gets attention. People really respond positively to it. You are probably going to be nervous asking, but that's normal. Relax as best as you can and be confident. If you ask in an assertive, polite way, you're more likely to get what you want. Know what you want. The more specific a request you make, the easier it will be for both you and the person you're asking. If you appear indecisive and unsure in what you want, your request will come off as weak. Part of success in asking for what you want is showing the person how much you really want it. Show this by being specific in what you want. Plus, being specific is just polite to the person you're asking in case they have to work around your request. Be flexible. Being specific in what you want is important, but so is being flexible. When I ask for my time off to travel, I had to accept the different position when I came back. If I had rigid in my, be flexible. Being specific in what you want is important. So be flexible. Being specific in what you want is important, but so is being flexible. When I asked for time off to travel, I had to accept the different position when I came back. If I had been rigid in my demands, I wouldn't have succeeded. It wasn't ideal for me, but it was acceptable in order to get what I wanted. If you're prepared to compromise, you'll succeed too. Be prepared for a no. Asking for what you want isn't a silver bullet for success. Oftentimes, you'll receive a no, and you have to be prepared for that. People want to help you. Before you ask for what you want, realize that people want to help you. It is rare for someone to respond negatively to a well-thought-out, polite request. Most people get a good feeling by helping another person out. Plus, they'll probably remember a time when they were in a similar position. If you keep this in mind, you'll be more confident, and that will get you one step closer to getting that yes. Remember, if you don't ask, you won't receive.